a feast for all seasons. Selwyn squared up the sandwiches, crust cut off, of course, quartered the quiche slices, tiered the tortillas and dips, and checked the canapes and cheese straws before piling up the profiteroles. This was going to be a feast that no one but no one would forget. The sausage rolls, chicken nuggets, vol-au-vents and pigs in blankets were warming nicely in the hotel's kitchen. The tables were well presented, and there was a photograph of Granger on the center table. Poor old Granger. He would have appreciated all the time and creative energy that Selwyn had poured into his wake. There was a slight blip on the horizon, as the Prosecco had been delayed. However, this had proved to be acceptable, as the funeral service had also been delayed. The hearse had had problems negotiating the bypass. Selwyn was keeping in touch with the proceedings via a borrowed two-way radio, the other end being in the hands of Granger's once secret lover, Gwendolyn, now a widow without portfolio. Selwyn had had to forego attending the actual service himself, as someone had to make sure that the wake went off without a whimper. He stood in the middle of the hotel banqueting ballroom and admired his handiwork. At that moment, the hotel manager sidled up behind him, tapped him on the shoulder, only to remind him that this was a late booking. Well, no one had envisaged that Granger would pop up quite so suddenly. Therefore, the wake had had to be squeezed in before a rather large wedding reception. The clock was ticking. However, just as the manager was called away to an urgency at the booking desk, the wedding reception crowd turned up unexpectedly. Selwyn tried to protest to the group that it wasn't their time yet, but the horde was in no mood to listen to timetables and reason. They were in a decidedly ugly disposition. The ceremony had had to be cancelled because the bride had changed her mind right at the last minute and run off with the wedding photographer, whom she'd only met 2 weeks earlier. Therefore, the service hadn't taken place. The wedding photographs at the local park hadn't taken place. In fact, they'd all waited around as long as they could, until the vicar told them they would have to go because the baptism was due to begin. Then somebody remembered that the reception had been booked and paid for. The crowd were determined to make something of the day and set off to snatch up as much food and drink as they could. They burst in through the doors of the hotel banqueting room, and before Selwyn could slip an inch of cling film over the piled high plates, descended upon his carefully prepared feast. Like a ravening mob, they all began tucking in. Despite Selwyn's feeble protests, the flapping of his hands, his desperate efforts to move silver servers out of their way, and all the while, the hotel bar staff stood around and watched in awe. The wedding guests made short shrift of the sandwiches, polished off the profiteroles, and trashed the tea cakes, and all the while ordering pints of lager and baby sham at the bar. Selwyn watched in horror as all his good work went for nothing. Even the photograph of Granger got used as a plate to pile up the goodies. And just at that moment, the cardboard boxes of clinking Prosecco bottles arrived. Selwyn rushed at the man as he came in through the doors, screaming, "Wrong hotel! Wrong hotel!" The scream drew the attention of many of the wedding guests, who looked at him and wondered whether he was on the bride's side of the family. He tried to push the man with his clinking cardboard container out of the room and into the corridor. The man stood firm. "No, this is the right hotel," he insisted. "Or you ought to know, I've been here often enough. I'm here for the funeral party. Admittedly, at this point, he did stop and wonder if he was at the right hotel when he saw the savages swigging pints and stuffing Scotch eggs into their gaping maws as though the four horsemen of the apocalypse were on their heels. The funeral's been cancelled, Selwyn spluttered. The wedding guests all began to look at each other in amazement. How do you cancel a funeral? Why do you cancel a funeral? All of them, the grooms, grannies and grandads, the bride's brothers and sisters, all began to regard Selwyn with deep suspicion. Was this man completely mad? Or was there something going on that they didn't know about? Selwyn's mind was descending into chaos. The funeral's been cancelled because... But before he could begin to think of any reason, the man from the wine merchant said, "Nothing to do with me. I'm only here to deliver the booze, not to participate in some profound discussion on religious ethics." And with that, he pushed Selwyn to one side and, followed by a troop of hotel staff who'd been patiently waiting outside in the corridor, proceeded with all boxes in their hands towards the central table, where the man dropped his box in the middle of it. "I need a signature," he announced, producing from his back pocket the delivery note and a chewed end biro. One of the less sober of the wedding guests lurched forward and scribbled Mickey Mouse on the form. The delivery man was satisfied that his end of the bargain had been complied with and left. By this time, there began a popping of Prosecco corks as the wedding guests passed round the bottles. By now, Selwyn's protests were far too feeble to be heard, and the guests were too busy scoffing the comestibles, slugging back the vino, and beginning to complain about the apparent lack of food. "Where's the cake?" went up the cry, "and the lack of more substantial booze than this cheap, fizzy stuff?" Selwyn did try to protest that the feast was never meant for them, but for a few selected friends and relatives of the deceased. But his efforts were put down as the ramblings of a madman. He looked at his watch. Where would they be with the ceremony by now? Laying the poor sod in the sod, he imagined, and beginning to look forward to ham sandwiches, pieces of cheese and pineapple on sticks, and cups of strong, dark brown tea. They would be wiping their dry eyes and making their way to the cars. Selwyn tried to find a quiet corner to contact Gwendolyn on the walkie-talkie. Perhaps he could delay them coming. Perhaps he could put them off altogether. But he switched on his rubber truncheon-like machine. It made a squeal as though in pain. He tried to call Gwendolyn, but only got the hotel staff on the other end, who kept telling him to switch off as they were dealing with an emergency in the spa suite. Selwyn turned his eyes to the wall. This was all the hotel's fault, for not standing up firm and blocking the entrance of these hooligans who'd arrived before their due time. He began to brighten. But of course, the whole farce had nothing to do with him. He could lay the blame where blame was due and feel quite sanctimonious in the process. Perhaps he should go and confront the front desk staff right now. When he opened the door to go out into the corridor, all he could see were people running backwards and forwards with worried looks on their faces and first aid boxes and buckets of ice in their hands. They had no time to bother with a small emergency in the banqueting ballroom. There were other matters to deal with. Selwyn was past caring now. He'd done his best. He really had. But no one was going to appreciate that, because there was nothing left to show for all his manful efforts. He found a seat at the edge of the room as someone climbed onto a table and began to make a speech. it was the best man's speech, hurriedly rewritten in his head to allow for the current situation. As he began to slag off the bride, the bride's family, the bride's uncles and aunts, the bride's friends and hangers-on, her ex-boyfriends, and just as he was getting into his stride, the bride's father strode in on his act and threatened to punch his lights out if you make any more disparaging remarks about my dear misunderstood darling. Things were beginning to look very, very ugly when the best man invited the bride's father outside to say all that again. At this moment, things could have gone either way. Then the bride's father stripped off his jacket, rolled up his shirt sleeves and shouted, "We'll see you'll get the best of all of this." He marched out of the room through the French windows, leading out onto the beautifully manicured lawns, and was followed en masse. The next time Selwyn looked up, the room was completely empty, except for the debris left behind. The plates were empty. The Prosecco bottles were left spinning on the ballroom parquet floor, and the profiteroles were all but crumbs of their former self. It was a disaster. "Never again, never again," muttered Selwyn to a retreating maid of honour, "never again will I ever offer to create a feast for their eyes and mouths." At that moment, a squeak came from his walkie-talkie. "They're on their way." He wanted to tell Gwendolyn that they shouldn't bother, that there was nothing left for them. But Gwendolyn rambled on. "Sorry it's been so long. We would have been quicker if the vicar hadn't tripped and fallen onto the coffin in the grave. It took quite a while to haul him out and brush him down for the ashes to ashes and dust to dust speech. But we're on our way now. I'm really looking forward to your wonderful spread." He tried to tell her, but all too late as she turned off her end of the walkie-talkie. There was no stopping them now. But just at that moment, the double doors of the room swung open and a hotel staff member came in and fixed them back with rubber wedges. The hotel catering staff swung into action. The emergency elsewhere was over, now to deal with the lesser one. They quickly scooped up the debris into black plastic bin bags, clearing away plates, cups, saucers, glasses and bottles. With military precision, the floors and the carpets were hoovered, the tablecloths removed into laundry bags, and within minutes, the room was cleared. Then, the tables and chairs were reformulated into a top table and side tables. They were draped in a freshly laundered tablecloth. Knives, forks, spoons were shoveled into place and glasses were set out. When the funeral cortege arrived, they found an empty room except for Selwyn, slouched in his own slough of despond. They were about to turn their backs on him when the hotel catering staff reappeared, carrying tapas and bottles originally ordered for the wedding reception. These were followed by plates piled high with chicken drumsticks, samosas, blinis, and other snacky things to keep them going until the main feast arrived. Champagne corks were popped around the room, and the funeral guests began to make merry. They were beginning to congratulate Selwyn on such a wonderful spread. But how had he managed to do it on such a small budget? Selwyn could only mutter that it was nothing really. The Granger needed a good send-off. The hotel was quickly exonerated from all blame, and everyone in no way the wiser tucked in. Whilst outside, the wedding guests all retreated to the nearest pub to lick their wounds, muttering that they wouldn't advise. "We wouldn't recommend that hotel on TripAdvisor."